want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberry.
I am your father.
Episode 4 of Sharp Angles. I'm one of your hosts, Rich Haywood, still playing the part of the fanboy. I'm here with
Danae Haywood. I'm the part of the novice, right?
I'm the novice.
Took me a minute.
And for once, I actually remembered my title. So this is Jeanette Louie, the neophyte.
All right. So, as you guys know, from, the past three episodes, Sharp Angles is a podcast of what happens when you put three people in a room with various experience levels of watching a movie, or sometimes maybe even a TV show. We'll get to that later. We sit down and talk about it. Somebody's seen it a whole bunch of times and is a fanboy. Someone's seen it a couple times and is a novice. And then someone's never seen it at all and is a neophyte. So we already got that out of the way. We sat down and watched A Tale of a True American Patriot, right here on Memorial Day weekend. And, of course, we're talking about Captain America, the First Avenger. Jumping right in for me, it was actually a little surprising, because I came into this one kind of down on it, because I remember the last viewing that I watched the movie, I kind of felt, oh man, well, it doesn't have that, MCU luster. It doesn't, so where's the big explosion craziness? Where's the awesome superhero action kind of thing? And to be honest, I was surprised at how much I liked the more grounded approach that this movie took. I really liked the way that the story was told. The direction was actually pretty decent, but I still have the same feelings about the villain though.
Yeah.
We kept referencing this toothless villain, and unfortunately that didn't prove me wrong watching this one again. I kind of felt that Red Skull could have been a really formidable enemy, and could have done a whole bunch of stuff. And to be honest, I feel Hugo Weaving was a little wasted, because all he did was, run around and spit a bunch of monologues and then, burn himself to a crisp by touching the Tesseract, which is dumb. Why would you do that?
Even his henchman, I will say, the doctor who is his henchman who ends up getting captured, it's sort of anticlimactic, The whole storyline involving Red Skull, who I didn't even realize that was his name, FYI.
I didn't either.
I don't even know if they actually say it.
Are you serious?
Movie. I'm not sure. I don't think they mentioned it.
That's actually kind of bad.
They mentioned his real name, which actually I forgot.
He's forgettable.
Because the villain itself is forgettable. But there's that moment where he pulls his face off, and he's like, "Oh, this is my true face. Mm-hmm. I'm the Red Skull." But he doesn't say that. It's known. He's got a red skull, so they call him the Red Skull. Right. And I was like, "Oh, well, all right. Now your face is red. So you're really angry, and you're gonna do cool stuff." No, all right. And you get in a fist fight with Captain America and.
For all of two seconds.
Yeah, have a brief battle at the end while on a flying plane that's the size of a city.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool, actually. I like that.
Well, the plane is cool.
The plane is awesome.
Captain America's cool.
Yep, Cap is really cool.
And basically the villain. Like, you take something, and I think we talked about this previously, you take something as formidable as Nazi Germany, and you add this extra layer of magic, right? Because yes. That's what we have to call it. It's magic.
Yep.
You take this extra layer of magic, and it could be terrifying. Now, we all know what the outcome of the war is. Like, let's face it, like, we know that eventually Captain America wins because we know that the Allied troops win the war.
Right.
But it could be truly terrifying, right? Because
there was a lot of horrific in-between history there before the Allies won the war.
Right. And, like, take some of those historical things, some things that are in the common gestalt, and make them Hydra's doing, right?
Right.
You know, like that.
The writers could have had a lot of fun with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's important to get Cap's backstory, and he's cool. Like, I love him. I think he's a fantastic hero. He's a Boy Scout. He's the guy that every guy wants to be. He's, and in many, 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 many ways, he is much like Superman. You know, like, and but he's more American than Superman, which is, you know, because
he's American.
Because he's American. And you get this, really neat backstory of this very frail guy who just wants to be. He doesn't even want to be a hero.
Yeah,
He just wants to be a soldier. His motives, his everything are in the right place. He wants to help. He wants to join the effort. He tries 5 times. Like, that's a good guy. And you make him the super soldier, right? And he goes from being, like, super scrawny, really thin, which is kind of cool because I don't know how they did it, but Chris Evans went from, like, this tiny little man to this big bad soldier, and they did a pretty good job, I have to say.
I just have to take issue with one word you use there, bad.
That's true. You know, but he is
a big, adorable soldier.
Right, he is a formidable...
He's Captain America. Yeah, but he's capable, but I don't know if I can call him formidable.
To enemies, you don't think he's formidable to enemies?
He's Captain America.
I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, by the end, you know, he's rolling up on, you know, hundreds of Hydra soldiers, you know, and they're, you know, like, he's running around the corner and he's like, well, you know, the guys are like, well, we're done. This dude's here with a shield and I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to lay down.
I'm not saying he's not capable. He's definitely capable. And he, but I can't even say that he kicks ass because his personality
language
is so...
Yes, exactly.
His personality is so Captain America, though. He never is not the good boy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I mean, I can see that. But that's the... Like, that's his...
That's I love
both,
him for it.
That's both his like, strongest quality and his biggest flaw. Because he doesn't make that tough call because he refuses to. Like, he's like, no. Everybody survives... No one dies, you know, like, I will, like, you know, it's me before anyone else. Like, you know, like, as far as, like, if someone's going to take a bullet, it's going
to
be me.
Or jump on a grenade to save everyone else.
Yeah, jump on a grenade.
Right, but that wasn't his character before he became the super soldier.
Right, right.
You know, but I have to say, I know human beings like that. You know what I mean? You know, Rich Haywood being one of them. he'd jump on a grenade to save everybody before, you know, letting one person die. So, you know, that's the attitude that he goes into it with, and that's the attitude that he keeps the entire time. But at the same time, he does kick butt. I don't want him to censure me on my language there, you know.
Nice.
He does that. If you've seen The Avengers
2,
that's a nod to that.
Yes, it's a running meme.
Yes.
The language.
And I don't want Captain America to disapprove of me. Because let me just state right now, I have nothing against him. I love him. He's an awesome superhero. He's someone to look up to, and Danae and I already discussed this on the side, like, weeks and weeks ago, but out of all the Avengers, if I had to date one, it would be Captain America in a heartbeat, just because he is that good guy. He's kind of perfect, actually.
Yeah. A lot like Superman. I mean, if we're going to put some, like,
yeah.
You know, he's the guy
who's very different from Tony Stark.
Very different from Tony Stark.
Yes, yes.
Even different from Thor. Thor's kind of stupid. he really is. He's not smart. You know, he's pretty, not smart.
He's a pretty meathead.
Right. He definitely is. He's the linebacker of the group.
Yes.
Right. You know, Tony's the class clown.
Or quarterback, if we're going with football terms here.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking more high school, but, you know, Tony's the quarterback, but Tony's got more substance than that, though, I have to say.
Yeah,
like,
he's a class clown, but he's not dumb.
Right,
yeah.
He's the class clown that does it because
he's brilliant.
He's bored.
Yeah.
Like, he's the droll, bored class clown. That's Tony Stark. You know,
he falls into that pitfall, like, you know, the genius, you know, billionaire playboy.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like, you know, an analog possibly to Batman, if you're going to draw comparisons to DC characters.
I could see
that. Without the complex, you know, without the, you know, deep-seated, oh my God, my parents are dead, and I feel like, you know, lost without them. And,
some type
of
way about them.
Yeah, and very, very much some type of way about it. Like, you know, like, I must get justice for my city because, you know, justice failed my parents. You know, so I am the justice, you know. Tony Stark doesn't have anything like that.
Well,
know?
But speaking of parents, though, I did find it rather interesting that in Captain America 1, apparently Tony definitely gets some of his womanizing qualities from his father.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's played up a little bit,
yep,
you know?
Yeah, Howard Stark definitely is one of those characters.
Yes.
You know? But you can see that, you know, he's got some of the brilliance, but not all of it. You know, he has experiments that were, you know, he put on a grand stage and they failed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tony wouldn't do that. He wouldn't show something like that.
Yeah. That,
you know,
that
to
shows
the general
weakness.
Public. Yeah,
that
so,
shows weakness. That's faulty, and Tony wouldn't do that.
And I actually thought at the end that car that nearly went off the cliff,
uh-huh.
I thought that car was going to start flying. And it was going to show that...
That would have been cool.
Yeah, I know. And I thought that, you know, Tony Stark's father, whose name I'm...
Howard.
That Howard had just played up the glitches to the crowd for some reason or another and actually had the technology. So I was kind of surprised when the car nearly went off the cliff.
Well, was that car, though, the one that... It was that...
I think
Howard's
it was the Nazi.
Or was it Red Skull's car?
Yeah, I think it was Red
Skull's. I think
Skull.
It was Red Skull's car.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were, like, talking about not a scratch and, you know, like, there's... Two times it gets hit by the rotors of the plane that they're trying to ride under, and then, you know, the bumper falls off while it's, like, the back end is trying to come off or something like that.
Yes.
So, yeah. That would have been cool, though. You know, like, if there were, like, some, like, repulsor technology or something in there, and then, like, you know, they were saved because the car, like, floated around or whatever. So, that is cool. but I guess for me, like, you know, we usually do scores at some point. So, I guess, you know, I'd probably give Cap like a good 7.5, you know.
Well,
like
you
maybe
usually do out of 5.
Out of 5?
Yeah. I have in the past, at least.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, man, out of 5.
I'm forgetting things, and we're only 4 episodes. That is bad. So, out of 5. So, well, then I do a strong 4 for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd give it a 4 as well.
Yeah.
Well, and I have to preface real quick before I give my score that I was told by a comic book fan that this movie was rather boring. And actually, I was told by another person that it was rather boring. And so I went into this movie expecting to be bored. And I definitely was not. I most definitely was not. I enjoyed it. I thought the ending had its rough issues, but... But I don't think I was bored at any point during this thing.
Confused, yes.
A little confused a few times, yes. But that also might have been because I was painting my nails and not looking at the screen. So I can't actually blame that on the movie necessarily. But I would still give this a 3.5.
Okay.
Whereas I gave Iron Man 1 a 4.5 and Iron Man 2 a 4.
Okay.
And I don't remember what... I think I gave Thor a 2.5, right?
Yeah, Thor was, I think, was the lowest scoring one.
I think I gave it the highest score out of the three of us.
Yeah.
But I might have scored Thor better than Iron Man 2, because, again, I have some real, obviously, some issues with Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Because, again, that villain thing, man, like, I will tell you, and I think I've brought this up before, we pretend that Superman Returns doesn't exist, except that Rich has a poster of it in the basement that's signed by the whole cast. But other than that, we pretend that Superman Returns doesn't exist. But if we're comparing superhero movies, and we look at, now, they're not direct comparisons in terms of heroes and... But if we look at the villain that is Zod in Man of Steel.
Yep.
And we look at the villains that are
Red Skull, yep, we got Red Skull, we got Anton, something...
Wait, but you called him Whiplash?
Whiplash, yes.
Okay, which we didn't know either. Like, I, even leaving that movie, Iron Man 2, we didn't know that his name was Whiplash.
Yep. Then we have... The one that you guys skipped is the Abomination. Was the actual literal name of the villain in The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, for real?
For real. It's called the Abomination.
Alrighty.
It's played by Tim Roth.
Well, that's a good pick for a villain, but, you know, that's all another story.
And then the Obadiah, who became Iron something.
Oh, yeah.
Piece of Iron guy. Brigade. Iron Brigand,
maybe? Something like that. Iron Man 1. He's the villain in Iron Man 1. And he's the best one out of the lot. Let's face it. Like, he's the best one out of the lot. But
so far, absolutely. Well, I don't know. We forgot Loki.
Oh, Loki's the best.
I can't remember the villain in Iron Man 1. Could someone refresh my memory?
Jeff Bridges?
Yep.
He's the partner in Tony Stark's company. He's bald.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot Loki, because Thor is Thor. Loki is by far the best villain.
Yes.
Loki is by far the best villain.
Yep.
Obadiah's number two.
Yes, I agree.
And then you could lump Red Skull and Whiplash into the same.
I don't know. I'd say Whiplash might be a little bit better.
As a villain, yes.
As a villain.
But
he's more memorable.
Right. But as a basis for a kind of breeding ground of creativity for the staff of something that comes after Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta go with Red Skull over Whiplash, because they don't do anything with him after that. He's done, he's forgotten, he's over. Hydra lives. You know,
Hydra lives, but Red Skull does not.
Yeah, that's true. But so yeah, I guess we can write off the villain itself, but the presence, or at least introduction to the MCU fandom for Hydra is kind of huge there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, I mean, I've seen Captain America 2 and really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So I understand Hydra's place in that and everything. But I don't think that Red Skull can. I don't think he can take any credit for that.
I mean, it's just
right.
He's just the figurehead.
Yeah.
He's kind of like if the Nazi regime had Adolf Hitler as their leader, you know, and then carried a torch. You know, some people, like crazy nut jobs out there, still carry a torch for this psycho guy. Hydra members still associate, you know, all of his sayings and teachings and all sorts of mm-hmm. crazy stuff to this day, at this day in the MCU.
Okay.
So I guess, you know, at least the memory of his dumb legacy or whatever lives on.
I don't know why you'd want to follow that dude.
No.
Red Skull? I don't know.
During the movie, when he was not on screen, I literally forgot that he existed.
Yeah.
I really did. I was like, oh yeah, that guy. I forgot he was here.
Because
he was so uninspiring as a villain.
Yeah. But if we go back to, like, we compare these villains, and Loki's fantastic. So, you know, like... But if you, and I know you haven't seen Man of Steel, but if you look at the two, if we parallel, Zod is incredibly terrifying. Like, he is maniacal. He is zealous. He is the kind of person you do not want to face, because mm-hmm. there is a large likelihood that either you're going to lose, or many, many people are going to lose their lives in the fallout of the confrontations, which happens. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that happens, and it's shocking, 100%. Shocking to people, especially because, you know, Superman is supposed to come in and save everyone. And so, like, the fallout of this villain is so much more intense than really any of the villains in the MCU. And, you know, I know
you're 100% correct.
You know, and like, that is how we become involved. Like, we become invested by what it costs emotionally. Like, that's as viewers, our job to become invested. And if you can't invest me in being worried for our hero's sake and concerned that he's going to make it or not make it, I got nothing for you. Like, yep. You know, I'm disappointed by that. I'm disappointed by that. And Captain America is a great story, and I love the whole arc. But you're right. The ending is like, and Jeanette looks at me and goes, "Wait, I don't understand what happened." And I'm like, "He got stuck in ice." And she goes, "How do you know?" And I'm like, "Well, because they found the shield at the beginning." But it's not. I wish they had never opened with them. Right. In the future, and then the past, and then the future again. Like, the sequence of events could have been different.
Right. Well, that whole first scene could have just been cut. You know, and it could have been, you know, "Hey, I'm worried about stepping on your, you know, your foot," which he doesn't get to say. Mm-hmm. Crash happens, you know, fade away, you know, you go to, you know, Agent Carter and talking to the other people, like, "Oh, man. You know, I can't believe he's gone, whatever. Oh, no, we're sad." Fade to black, fade back in to that scene in the beginning.
I love that summary, just for the record.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's just... I've seen that a lot.
Yes.
Because they retread that ground, not just with Captain America, but it seems to be like... If they want to reference Captain America's backstory, it's him in the plane.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
Because it happens in the Avengers.
It happens in the Avengers. It happens in Agent Carter. Yes. It happens in Agent Carter.
And that's
Carter
part
again.
Of the reason why I was confused. Like... is because I had seen Captain America 2, and I had seen the first episode of Agent Carter. I kind of feel as if with this movie, and again, I liked it. I enjoyed myself. I was not bored at any point. Yeah. But I rather feel as if they took a lot of information, backstory and forward story, mm-hmm. and smashed it all into a single movie.
Yep.
And I feel as if maybe it could have been sliced a little bit better than it was.
I agree. But I think the reasoning behind all the things that we saw in Captain America was because they were already neck deep in filming the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, "Oh my god, this thing just happened, and we have to make sure that audience members know that, you know, like, you know, for the 2 seconds it happens in the Avengers, that there's a whole story that goes behind this." So when, you know, there's a throwaway line here or there, it's referencing, you know, the work they're putting into Captain America 1.
Yeah. But that's only so much of an excuse. It might be an explanation, but I feel as if they still could have done a better job at again, putting all this information into a single movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, they had scenes where it was just a compilation of, you know, Captain America smashing things, and Captain America winning this battle, and Captain America doing that. And it was just a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, it was true.
And I think some of that was to get that movie blockbuster feel, because this came out in the summer, and it was like summer blockbuster.
This was the main movie.
So if you didn't have Captain America smash, then they were worried about it taking a hit. So they sacrificed some of the, what they could have done with the story for
storyline integrity.
Right.
Yeah.
For
special effects and box office dollars.
But if I'm not mistaken though, just to kind of like lend credence to that, I think it might be the worst one financially.
Yeah. Not Thor?
No. Keep going. I'm going
to
look.
So I think that they did that to ensure that they made their money. You know, and you know, you have a bunch of splashy things that, you know...
It took up all of 60 seconds, 120 maybe?
Right. But it gives you that, you know, that Iron Man-esque, you know, like...
Except that this... And I'm sorry, I know I keep interrupting it's you. Okay. But except that this movie was so exceptionally different from Iron Man 1 and 2. Because, yes, you're right, Iron Man 1 and 2 did have all these explosions and crashes and big, bright, shiny moments. Mm-hmm. And Captain America, I don't think, would have been worse off for not having those.
I agree. I think sometimes what happens is, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, because I have no evidence to back this up except for anecdotal, but I think that sometimes they forget that some, or if not most, and I'm reaching here about most, of their audiences are rather smart and appreciate a story. Mm. I think that that's some of the problem, to be honest with you. And so they forget that we appreciate a story, and then they try and pull a Michael Bay and, you know, put in lots of flashy things because men, maybe it'll distract us. And the reality of the situation is, as much as I like big flashy explosions, and I do, like, there's a part of me that does, like, oh wow, that's cool. The reality of the situation is I'd rather be told a good story. And, you know, to sacrifice story for explosions is not my favorite, you know, and that's, you know, for a character as wonderful as Cap, for a storyline that had so much potential, I feel like, you know, like, it sort of cheapens it. Yeah. And I want to say I love this movie, I give it 5 stars, you know, but I can't necessarily say that. You know, I liked it a lot. I wouldn't have given it 4 stars if I hadn't. But I want to be told a good story more than I want to see things go poof.
And see, with Captain America 2, I would totally give it 4.5 stars right
there. I've not seen it. So.
But because it does a good job of combining story with flashy booms.
Yep.
And I like a backstory. And I love the era. Like, I love the, you know, that it's such a, and it is such a romanticized era. Let's face it. You know, like, I'm sure living back then wasn't easy. Darn it. I just messed up my nail. I'm sure living back then wasn't easy, and I'm sure the war was hard, and I know, you know, and we get revisionist versions and revisionist tales about what it was like, and it's romanticized. Oh, but, you know, I that doesn't stop me from loving the era, and so it would have been great if we could have focused on that story and really had a compelling, really wonderful, cohesive tale, you know.
I agree.
I'm with you.
So, yeah, in the news, if we are continuing to not count Incredible Hulk...
We don't.
Which we don't.
We don't.
Then Captain America the First Avenger was the worst performing domestically in the box office.
What did it make?
$176 million.
Wow.
On a shooting budget of $65 million.
So it more than doubled its money.
More than doubled its budget. So yes.
What did Thor make?
181.
Okay.
On a $65 million budget.
How about Captain America 2?
259 mil on a $95 million budget.
So doubled the first movie's money.
Yep. So, but I mean, and then, you know, in the movie money, you know, it ranking, it's Captain America, Thor the Dark World.
Man, Thor.
Cap 2, Iron Man 2, Iron Man, Guardians of the Galaxy. Currently, Avengers Age of Ultron, which will continue to change because the movie is just a juggernaut. Iron Man 3, and then The Avengers. Hmm. So.
Well, and I have to say that the storytelling of, and this is spoilerific, okay? Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, oh no.
We do spoiler alerts, though. Oh, well, we don't give actual spoiler alert warnings, but we spoil everything, so go for it.
That's true.
Yeah.
when we're talking about storytelling and a very compelling villain, Ultron, they did it right. You know,
awesome.
You know, you take Loki, and he's a fantastic villain, but I would actually argue... that Ultron is almost a better villain than Loki. Like, he is terrifying. He is utterly petrifying. Yeah. And And I leaned over at one point in the movie, and, you know, again, we're off topic, but I leaned over in the movie, and I leaned over to Rich, and I'm like, they win, right? And Rich sort of looks at me and goes, yeah, and I'm like, you're sure? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, as long as, okay. So, you know, that's how compelling. Yeah,
there is something to lose.
Right, you know.
Like,
you know.
And it's not just like, oh, well, we'll lose this battle, we'll go and fight him another day. If we lose this battle, the Earth is over.
Right.
Like, you know, like, it gets to that magnitude. Which is something I agree with when you were talking about the difference between the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the DC Continuum. And I hope that someone out there in the DC Continuum is actually listening to this podcast right now as I'm saying these things. But please, for the love of God, keep that edge to the DC Universe, because if you lose it and then go to popcorn flick, you know, toothless villains that run around and, you know, all smile and almost, like, hand their entire plan and plot over to the heroes who just saved the day, then you're going to lose the only edge you had over people going to see your movies, and then no one will go see your movies, and then I'm never going to get another good Superman movie, so please don't do that. Please.
Agreed.
That's my thing. You know, like, I want to see my dude, you know, on a big screen. My dream is someday they will do this. I want to see my guy fighting Doomsday, the end. Like, that's what I want to see. Because in the DC whole universe, there's only one force that's actually powerful enough to stop Superman. And that's it. And that's Doomsday. That's the only one. You know, Darkseid, I'm sure we're going to see him. He's got nothing on Superman. You know, like, there is this, like, all sorts of crazy, like, super gods that are, like, flying all over the place in the DC Continuum. They got nothing on Superman. You stick Doomsday in a movie, I start peeing. Because
it's bad.
Because it's, like, I've never, ever read a story. And I know a lot of people out there are like, oh, well, you know, Doomsday is just some, like, ham-fisted approach of, you know, like, finally, you know, saying, hey, look, he can bleed. But you know what? I was like 13 or 14 when I was reading that stuff, and you know what? I saw Superman bleed, and I went, holy crap. Nothing can hurt this dude. Why is this guy just like, he's like, his jaw broken, and
dang.
He's like, you know, like, they get into this crazy slugfest in the middle of Metropolis and hit each other so hard they're shattering windows and like three blocks away. It's like crazy. And who wouldn't want to see that and like on a screen? And then, you know, yeah, maybe you can take some creative liberties, and please do take creative liberties of what happens afterwards with the whole, like, weird kind of, like, death and return kind of thing, you know. But, man, that would be a great movie. And, you know, and that would be, like, a great movie to see, like, a Justice League movie in there. You do the death and return of Superman in a Justice League 2, maybe. You know, like, not the first one, because you can't, you know, have this big bang there. You still have to have Superman, like, destroying big bads that he can deal with, like Brainiac or something. I don't know. But anyway, that's, you know, but that's the difference. You know, you go to DC because you see the real stuff that can happen with real consequences and people actually die. Now, in a Marvel movie, like, it's implied that maybe some people just, like, died because this building exploded and they might not have gotten them all out. But they're, you know, even in Avengers 2, they're very careful to say, you know, oh, well, this whole building is about to be destroyed, but Iron Man's got these really cool scanners, and we're just to make sure, like, nope, nobody's in there, no life forms. Okay, this building's good to just demolish.
Mm-hmm. And he buys it first.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'm a complete and total girl in this, but I don't mind that.
I think there has to be something to lose in order for it to feel like a win.
Right.
You know, like, and I will tell you, in Age of Ultron, there's a tremendous amount to lose. In Captain America, well, so this is the interesting thing about Captain America. Obviously, it's pretty poignant because what we haven't talked about is his best friend dying on his watch, on a mission with him. It's actually pretty tragic. And, you were painting your nails.
I was painting my nails.
And you were like, isn't that a little anticlimactic? And I remember the first time, And it stuck with me because I looked at them both of them, and I think Bucky dies. And Rich is like, nah, and he didn't answer, actually. And Jeanette's like, no. And I'm like, pretty sure he does.
He doesn't, though.
Well, I haven't seen Captain America 2. I haven't seen Winter Soldier, so I don't know. But he falls off the train, off a cliff. Like a really, 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 really deep cliff.
It's definitely implied in this movie that he dies.
Right. It would appear as though he dies.
Yeah.
And so Cap loses. He actually loses a lot, if you think about it. He loses his best friend. He goes on this mission, and he loses 70 years, and he loses the person that he loves. And actually, the interesting thing is, they never kiss. They never even... They don't even really have physical contact.
Like, she kisses him. Except
for at the very
she,
end.
Oh.
Yeah.
She gives him a big old smooch right before...
I was painting my nails.
Yeah. he gives him a big old smooch before he gets on the plane with Red Skull to have the battle.
Got it.
And says, come on back safe or something like that.
Got it.
And then he's like, okay, cool. You know, I'll just be beating up this dude and I'll be right back.
Right.
But see, this is where I have an issue with them cramming so much into one single movie, is that I never had an emotional connection to Bucky. And honestly, I didn't really have an emotional connection, an emotional attachment to any kind of relationship between Captain America and Agent Carter either. I knew that they had feelings for each other, but I didn't feel as if it was developed enough for me to care that, oh, Agent Carter doesn't get her man in the end, and guess what? Captain America now misses her 70 years later.
Right.
Well, I really well, didn't for, feel, well, I didn't for, have any emotional, I didn't care.
Yeah. Well, for Cap, though, he doesn't realize it. Like, that's his thing. Like, he doesn't realize 70 years has passed until someone comes in and be like, yo, guy, you've been asleep for 70 years.
Well, and then he says, you know, oh, I was supposed to have a date. I was supposed to make a date or something like that. So obviously he does care.
So to him, no time has passed, and he really cares about that character.
Yes.
So he had something to lose, and now he realizes, well, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, like 70 years. She's long gone.
But again, I didn't even have a twinge of a twinge of unhappiness or sorrow for him in that, because I didn't feel as if that particular relationship really was developed all that much.
That's true.
Now, it also might be because, again, if I had to choose an Avenger to be my boyfriend, I'd pick him, so he's mine, he's not Agent Carter's. But at the same time, again, I felt as if they could develop that more, and they just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah.
And there's a lot of, like, near misses with him, and you can tell, even when he's, like, short and scrawny and all of this, like, he impresses her with his bravery, his courage, his ability to put others before himself always.
Yes.
And you know, there's a moment when he's undergoing the transformation that she's, like, screaming at the doctor to stop the experiment. And he says, from the capsule, he goes, no, I can handle it. I can do this, you know. And you can tell she's, like, not happy about it. But, you know, so you get the sense that there's feelings there. But I would agree to some extent. Like, it's hard because the waters are muddied by the fact that I've seen Agent Carter and the Avengers and, you know, whatever. But you get the sense that she does have feelings. But in this movie in particular, she's a little hard to connect with, too. Like, her role is a little confusing. You don't exactly know why she's there.
And she's an agent.
She's an agent, but she doesn't do anything.
She doesn't, like, do any agent-y thing.
Right, yeah, right. She except that she shoots the guy who's running off with the serum. You know, and that's it. That's all she does, and she doesn't even get it, and she gets the driver. And, you know, and so, I don't know, she's a little bit hard to connect with. I like her tremendously, but I've seen Agent Carter, and I think she's pretty cool, and I think that she's got that British stiff upper lip thing going on, so I like that. Jeanette objects to that, but I don't mind it. I like it, but she's hard, like, she's a hard character to have feelings for. Like, even when she's saying, I'll teach you, come on back, you know, whatever, I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, they'd have a great thing. I don't know if it would last between the two of them, though.
No, I think it would.
Yeah.
I think I'm fully convinced that if they had more screen time, that they could have made a beautiful relationship. But they just didn't have that. And so, again, I didn't care that they lost each other.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, when I saw it, I mean, this time and the first time, I kind of like, you feel for it because,
Well.
Like, there's that scrawny kid in the audience that watches that movie and goes, man, that could be me. And then, that's really cool that, that agent even looks my way or notices that I exist now that I'm, some big, hulking guy or whatever. But you gotta, with the transformation, he doesn't transform emotionally. He has the same exact character traits as he did when he was, a little scrawny guy. So,
which is wonderful.
Right. Well, he also has the same mindset. He's like, now because I look good doesn't mean I'm going to be, super suave and, having, girls all over the place, even though the girls are now starting to chase him because he looks, very attractive.
He looks like he does.
So, but he's not aware of that. He's just aware that that first girl noticed him before he became the symbol.
Yeah.
Right? And then it stuck with him because it's like, oh, well, she likes me for me. And now that I'm all this super awesome guy, I'm like, all right, well, that's just icing on the cake, I guess. But she likes me before I was me, So he attaches to that whole thing. So, and watching the story, I could relate to kind of like that thing, because I was the scrawny kid growing up. I went through and graduated high school at 97 pounds. So I literally could have been a poster child for Steve Rogers, going into the military and, I had, half the problems that were on the list for Steve Rogers. I had all those when I was a little kid. So I was just like, no, they weren't going to take me either if I tried to go fight the good fight in a war somewhere or whatever. So I kind of see where they went with the storytelling. But I agree with you that, maybe even at the end, he might have those feelings, but how does Agent Carter, have that attachment, I don't believe that, that she has that true-to-form attachment. But then again, they write it in after the fact.
Well, I get the scrawny kid finds absolute drop-dead hottie appeal. I completely understand that part. That's not what I'm objecting to. What I'm objecting to is that, again, I didn't feel as if their relationship on screen was developed very much. There's just, these little hints and these glances and these looks and yes, there's poignant moments where she says, stop the experiment because you're hurting him. Obviously, she cares about him. You can see it on her face. But those were not... those were not developed enough for me to care about the ultimate end, which is they don't get each other. Sure. Then again, I do have to say is that in Iron Man 1 and 2, honestly, I didn't get the romantic connections there either. So maybe Marvel just really bites at romance or something. I don't know.
Well, and actually...
Or possibly, let me just interject. Sorry. But, or possibly... because you just said that, and as the man in the room, I got every single bit of nuance between Pepper and Tony Stark. Every single bit of it.
But did you actually care about their relationship?
Yes.
Really? Because I didn't.
Yep. I rooted for that relationship the entire time.
Eh.
Because they have the guy angle down pat. Whoever's writing these things has that angle. And knows where to go to, to find the geek heart in the geek man that is watching the geek movie.
Okay, so in that case, Danae, what do you think? Did you understand the romantic? Not understand, but did you care about it?
Between Tony and Pepper?
Yeah.
It's so funny, because the last time I saw any of these movies, it's difficult for me to say at this point.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. I freaking can't stand Gwyneth Paltrow. And that...
Why? Because she's freaking irritating?
Yeah, and she's so supercilious. And I cannot... I just can't stand her. So
I don't really like her either, just for the record.
No, so and I don't love Pepper's character. I think she's okay, but
her name is horrible.
Yeah, you know, Virginia. Why not call her Ginny? Like I don't know. I'm just saying. But
get asked Stan about that.
Well, because he loves that alliteration. That, you know, like
normally Steve, I am all for alliteration, but yeah. Pepper Potts, no, not so much.
Yeah, Steve like, Rogers, Pepper Potts, Bruce Banner.
Yeah, we got Tony Stark is not alliterative, but you get Peter Parker, you know, like, but so we got to call her Pepper because it's alliterative with Potts. I don't know, but anyway, I think the one appeal of Iron Man 2 when I saw it first, which was that the fact that their relationship was finally consummated with that kiss. And like I think I was rooting for them, but if I recall correctly. Do I care that much about them? No. Did I care about Thor and what's her name? No. And the funny thing is that I don't remember what her name is.
Natalie Portman.
Oh, that's it. I forgot. It's a good way to remember. Tarzan.
is her name Billy Jane?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
It's funny, again, spoiler alert, there's a point in time where, well, and actually, you know, too, because of the controversy over what Jeremy Renner and Chris Evans said about Black Widow, you know, Black Widow and Bruce Banner, and, like, I didn't care about that either, and I didn't get the, you know, I didn't get the nuance there, you know.
And I didn't care about it even more, because, you know what? Bruce Banner's not in love with anyone else but the one character. Bruce Banner loves Betty Ross, the daughter of General Ross, the guy who was trying to kill him all movie long in The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, dang.
And also the story of The Incredible Hulk.
But we don't count that.
But we don't count that because it doesn't exist. And apparently it doesn't exist in the MCU either, even though there is MCU references floated in and throughout The Incredible Hulk, the actual movie.
Well, in the comic books, and I'm sure you will correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah,
but isn't he married
to
a girl, and then he turns into the Hulk and she leaves him or something?
I don't know, actually.
Okay.
I mean, in a serious relationship, possibly engaged, maybe, but I don't know if she's actually married.
Okay.
But I don't know enough about the early goings-on of the Hulk. But then again, as we've seen time and time again with movies and TV shows, none of that stuff can matter.
Yeah.
And now that we're talking about Marvel Comics, sometimes it doesn't even matter in the books. Because there has been specific events now irrevocably changed by other major comic events that are molding the movie universe into the comic universe. And it's kind of troubling, because some of it's getting, like, real political, and some of it's getting real nasty, and I don't know if I really like it, to be honest. Like, for example, go ahead. Spoilers, you know, for the neophyte that hasn't seen Avengers 2 yet, but there are two characters that get introduced in Avengers 2. We talked about it a little offline. Those two characters have a very specific origin story that I'm not going to say, because I'll talk to you after we watch the Avengers 2.
Okay.
They get introduced with a completely different backstory in the Avengers 2 as types of people or types of humans that they technically are not, because, well, Marvel doesn't have the rights because of reasons to call these characters who they really are. So the characters are technically mutants. Two very important mutants to the Marvel universe, the comic universe, but they can't call them mutants because 20th Century Fox owns the rights to the X-Men,
okay,
which is the collective of all the mutants. And those two characters are technically, like, related in some way to the X-Men.
Wow, this is getting convoluted.
Yeah. So they rewrite the backstory so they can fit it into the Avengers because they want to tell this story and need them. So they create them as First they call them miracles, and then they call them just enhanced, like enhanced humans.
Okay.
As in, now they're a genetic experiment instead of possibly offspring of another mutant character, which is their original, one of their original backstories. So that gets erased. So what happens now in the regular Marvel comic universe? There's now a big restructuring of the universe due to this crazy event called Secret Wars that just started recently in the comics and has now basically reset the Marvel universe again, even though they actually just reset it in the comic books like 4 years ago or something like that. In that retelling, they reset these two characters' origins to the exact origins from the movie and of the original. And people just went berserk.
Oh, I'm sure, because I would have too.
Because the way they told it in this other story, bless you.
Thank you.
The way they told it in this other story, it was like so compelling, so like at times like kind of like emotionally charged and like maybe even a little heart-wrenching because of like crazy things that are happening. And you know, like, then something, like, major happens because of the fallout of some event, and none of that matters now because they're not those people anymore. And it's just like, what is happening? Like,
I'd be irritated.
You know, but you know, some might say, after listening to me, you have this little, like, rant, oh, well, welcome to the comic universe, because that's exactly what happens all the time, ever. You know, and they've changed major things that happened even on the DC side.
Okay.
You know, characters that were dead are now back. You know, like, characters that may or may not have existed at all now exist. And, you know, then you have, like, all sorts of other crazy stuff, you know, happening. So, you know, in that sense, I don't know. Like, some of that stuff, like, kind of really bothers me to the point that, you know, I wish that there was actually a... you know, a way to, I don't know, I guess I wish that there was just a way that, you know, there could be a separation. Like, hey, this is the definitive movie universe, and we're not going to play in the sandbox anymore of the comic universe. We're just going to tell our own thing, but we're going to reference all the cool moments that you love out of the comics instead of just, oh, well, this thing happened, and we're in a legal dispute with another, like, partner, so we're just going to change and alter our universe until we either push you out or you just give up, which I think is actually what's happening, because the same argument is applies directly with the X-Men, because one of their lead characters, Wolverine, right?
Right.
You know who Wolverine is, because everybody knows who Wolverine is, right? Well, what if I told you he's dead?
I think I would be a little disappointed.
Well... prepare for disappointment, because he's dead.
Okay.
In the comic universe.
In the comic universe. Well,
they'll probably bring him back.
He's already coming back.
Yeah, but there we go.
This is where the politics come in, and when where it gets very political. Disney is upset because 20th Century Fox doesn't want to leave the sandbox.
Right.
And so they're kicking sand in their face.
Yep. Why would they? Let's face it. They can make money off of this.
Right.
They are continuing to do so. That's why there's a dispute.
Right. And so Disney keeps kicking sand in their face until they make the storyline of the X-Men completely impotent via the comics, and therefore makes it like pirates the material, essentially. And there's a reason, a very good reason, why we refer to Walt Disney, the Walt Disney Corporation, as the Pirate Mouse here. You know, like, and that's our own term for it. And it's because
it's like an in-house
they are very much that way.
They're ruthless.
And
they're good at what they do.
And completely... they have no moral compass whatsoever.
Which is funny, considering how they portray themselves as being the moral compass.
Right.
Wishing upon a star, and doing the right thing, and blah, blah, blah,
right.
Chirp, chirp, beep, beep.
But they're completely immoral in how they do business.
Yeah.
Or, and actually, I would even say...
Immoral?
Immoral, yeah. As much as it's wonderful that... like, we like these movies and we're highly entertained, part of patronizing some of this bothers me a little bit, to be honest with you, because I find their immorality unsettling, you know?
Okay, here's the thing. I am not defending Disney in any way, shape, or form, but you really think that 20th Century Fox wouldn't be doing this if they could be?
I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying that I have difficulty with the fact that they're so high-handed about everything.
Oh, yeah.
And it's monopolizing. And it goes against free enterprise. And, you know, like, and it's anti-capitalist. And,
I don't know if it's anti-capitalist. It's cutthroat capitalist. But I don't know if it's anti.
I don't know. It's very underhanded.
Yeah.
It's very underhanded.
Well, I mean, and it could have been because maybe that original deal should have been written a little clearer on Disney's end. You know, when they bought Marvel, they should have said, you know, we're buying all of these properties and all of these things, and then we're going to reach out to all the other studios that own Marvel properties, and we're literally going to buy them out all at once. Like, done. Wholesale. Give it all to me. Because there were three studios that were involved in that play when that happened. You know, there was Universal. Actually, four. There was Universal, there was Paramount, there was 20th Century Fox, and then there was Sony Pictures.
Okay.
All four of those studios had made a Marvel movie before the merger, before the purchase of Marvel Comics by Disney, and then the fold into Buena Vista Entertainment of the MCU. So, I mean, it's really weird because, to see what happened now, like to see it happen, like, you know, Universal and Paramount, just here, take it, done. You know, have your stuff. We'll have like a publishing back end, you know, help you distribute, you know, like, for a little bit of a cut, you know, whatever. Sony got into financial trouble and then was almost pushed into a corner, not by Disney, but by their own, you know, like, mismanagement to sell Spider-Man back to Marvel. So now Spider-Man's in the fold. So sooner or later you're going to see him floating around. Probably in Civil War next year. Okay. In Captain America 3. But then, you know, here's Fox, the only holdout. But maybe Fox feels scorned because they lost their other biggest property ever because Disney also bought Lucasfilm. So they lost Star Wars and Indiana Jones and all that other stuff. Those were 20th Century Fox staples. They were movies that made them lots of money, and now they don't get that anymore because Disney owns that. And then they're like, well, you know, we also own Marvel, so come on, how about you give us the X-Men? And they're like, no.
Fox News is like, not Fox News, 20th Century Fox.
20th Century Fox is like, no, you're not getting them, you're not getting that. You know what? You're not getting Fantastic Four either, because we're going to make another movie. Yeah, take that. And then, you know, Marvel responds with, all right, cool. Well, we're announcing that, you know, Fantastic Four's last issue was May. Done. Over.
But at the same time, I mean, obviously, yes, these comic books have a humongous following. But at this point, I feel as if they've also gone mainstream in the cinematic world.
Yep.
And so, therefore, them changing the comic books doesn't necessarily mean changing the bottom line of the movie's potential.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I think it's like too. It's too weird that they're like it for me being a comic fan first, and then a movie fan second. I guess.
Yeah.
It just seems like too much meddling.
Yeah.
You know, like stop messing with it. If you can't get it right in the movies, then don't use it yet. Figure it out and then make it right later.
Or do they have to be so exceptionally, completely, and totally connected?
Well.
It would be nice if they do, but why go to such crazy gyrations in order to make them this connected?
Well, because I think that they fell into their own trap. You know, the reason why we just watched these four movies to culminate into this other awesome thing is because that's what, like, you know, all of geek fandom was crying out for, like, holy crap, this is gonna happen. You know, like, we're going to see the pages come to life on screen.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we're pumping money into these studios to keep giving us more.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, seeing those epic moments is awesome. Like, the payoff in those like team up movies is, you know, something that, you know, yeah, it used to happen in a lesser degree in some of the old serials. You know, you'd see like reoccurring characters, mm-hmm. and then they'd come up in the team up movie and whatever. But, you know, like nowadays, you know, just the cost alone is prohibitive to actually have that thing happen. You know, and now you see Warner Brothers chasing Marvel's tail to try to do that on their end too. But it's cool. It's neat. Like, people love seeing it. So,
and it's cool reason. And it's neat and people love seeing it, but at the same time, don't you think that they're hooked on the movies enough as it is that, yeah, it would be sad if they didn't get to see those major moments produced in film, mm-mm. but they'd still go to see it anyway, even yeah. if it, they don't get that
That's
bonus.
True.
Right.
But I think then you get the business end. You know, you get the business end of the equation, and where all the number crunchers go, well, if we don't have these big, giant moments, then we're going to get diminishing returns, and then sooner or later, we're not going to be able to afford the next one.
Right. Well, and two, if you don't have anything to base it on, if you don't have that fan following, who's going to turn out to see your movie?
Right.
You know, like, if nobody knows who the Fantastic Four is in 10 years because they're no longer...
There's no more comics.
You know, who's going to go see the movie? Like, who cares about the Fantastic Four then? You know, who cares about Harry Potter if nobody's reading the books? Who cares about, you know...
I don't entirely agree with that, though, because you can do some pretty darn fabulous things with previews in order to, and advertising in order to get audience members. And, I mean, the actual product might not be nearly as worthwhile as it could have been, but at the same time, you still got those numbers because guess what? You drew people in through advertising.
And not every, obviously not every movie is based off a book. There are some original movies, you know, many original movies out there. So that's a very valid point. You know, I think that audiences are driven to see things that are based on some sort of literature, whether it's comic books or a real book or whatever. And that's where, that's what they're saying they're definitely making money on this rather than taking a gamble on something like Tomorrowland, which isn't based on a book. Well, you know.
Well, can I give an example, though?
Sure.
So for Guardians of the Galaxy, I think my friend Marianne, who is a comic book fan, she and I saw the previews together watching something else in the theaters, and her automatic reaction was, oh my word, they're making this, I completely forgot about these comic books, but because it was so long ago that I read them, but I will totally go see that movie because of something I read 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And my reaction was, oh my word, that looks absolutely hysterical. I wouldn't have known that it was based off of anything.
Right.
I thought it was just, you know, some
random.
Random, yeah, space odyssey.
Sure.
And yep. So I was like, oh, I want to see that too. So that was something that Marianne hadn't thought of in forever and yet was still interested in because of her past. Whereas I had absolutely no connection to it whatsoever and still responded to the advertising.
Yeah. And that nostalgia factor does impact certain things. Like, you know, there's a reason why people go looking for classic candy from their...
Yeah, totally.
You know,
like, yeah.
Or
My Little Ponies.
Or My Little Pony, the OG My Little Ponies, not these... you know, whatever the new wave of my
friendship is magic ponies.
Yeah, friend. No, we don't.
No, we don't like.
No bronies. No bronies.
All right.
You look like you have a headache.
Or possibly the reason why, you know, people that lived in the late 70s are now once again waiting with bated breath for December. You know, for the return of their pop culture icon,
right? Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So,
right.
You know, and then in the hopes that they don't light it on fire again.
Crossing our fingers about that. Yeah.
So, but anyway, so, I mean, obviously I think, you know, we talked, you know, we went on a little bunny trail, but we talked a whole bunch about,
yeah,
we talked a whole bunch about, you know, Captain America's relevance in not only just American history, but comic history, and there's no way you can have the Avengers without, you know, Captain America.
The first Avenger.
Yeah, you can't have the Marvel Cinematic Universe without Captain America.
Right.
So, you know, obviously the thing that where we go, well, where is this movie's place in time and space as far as the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I mean, it's, you know, it's yet another anchor that has to be there. So I think we can all agree with that, right?
Yeah.
And I have to say, I am definitely looking forward to seeing how Captain America and Tony Stark interact with each other.
Yes.
That's pretty fantastic.
It's some good times.
And fun facts for Memorial Day weekend. The Captain America first appeared in 1941, according to my source is Wikipedia, be aware. And March of 1941, as a super soldier, his backstory is much what we saw in the movie, and it was meant to inspire people to buy war bonds and also for men to join the army to be like Captain America.
And also to inspire the troops who are already enlisted.
Yep. And also to inspire the troops that are already enlisted. And so, like, he comes out of... this is a piece of Americana right here.
Yep.
That I think, to be honest with you, Chris Evans portrayed beautifully.
Oh, he did.
Yep. You know, like, and continues to portray to this day. And we're hoping for another contract for him for the next... Yes. Because he admitted that his contract is up.
Oh, come on. They're totally giving him.
There's no way that he doesn't appear in the next movie.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I mean, he might not make it out of the next movie. Just, you know. Spoiler alert. Maybe.
Wait. They might kill him? They might...
I don't want to say anything. But you know, like...
Much like we don't know certain things about your sister's pregnancy, we don't know that Captain America dies in Civil War.
Yeah. So, we you know...
But they bring him back somehow, correct?
Maybe.
You can't kill him. Sorry, no. Maybe. I refuse to accept that.
I'm just saying. Like, you know, but who knows? They might not even go there with that, you know, because they might feel that Chris Evans' character means so much to the MCU that they can't get people behind, you know, Falcon or, you know, Bucky, which are two, like, almost, not suitable, but they were technically stand-ins for Steve Rogers when Steve Rogers wasn't around. That has already happened in the comic books. Like, you know, there's been replacements here and there. Not because he was dead, because he was doing something else or whatever, you know, or, you know, some weird comic book reason. But in Civil War particularly, which is the name of Captain America 3, there is a climactic event in which Steve Rogers doesn't see the next day for a little bit, I guess. You know, like, but to the point where I don't know if he's actually back yet. I don't know.
I'm putting my foot down. As a growing fan, I'm putting my foot down and saying no. Not allowed.
He's not allowed? He's not allowed to eat it?
We do love him.
Yeah. No, I really like him too. Because, you know... He is that grounding force that gets everybody together.
He's just a good guy.
Yeah. He is a good dude. So, but this is getting us... This is it.
All right.
You see, all the players are in place. All the backstories are told, for the most part. So we skipped to Incredible Hulk, but you guys know.
It doesn't count.
Gamma rays, and, you know, he was a scientist, and he got this thing, and he really hates his power. That's all you really need to know.
And Mark Ruffalo.
Rom-com.
Rom-com Mark Ruffalo gets his introduction, and then you'll get enough more Hulk backstory in the first half hour or so of the movie. Now, getting into that, before we get to the actual viewing, I will tell you that I did exactly what you did as an experiment right before actually watching The Incredible Hulk, because I was bored one day. That's another like lost podcast that'll probably do a flashcast for later. But I watched the first 20 something minutes of The Avengers and then physically just turned it off just to see where my feelings were.
Okay, interesting. And I will have to actually document exactly where in the movie I did turn it off. I don't know if I got 20 minutes in.
So, yeah, I mean, if you got 20 minutes in, I will tell you, I had a hard time going, I don't know, I'm still interested.
Okay, no,
we had just watched Iron Man 2, Iron Man 1, and 4, and I'm like, no, I'm still interested.
Okay, when we watch it, which may or may not be later tonight, then I will say exactly where it is, and we'll have to pause and be like, okay, it's, you know, 10 minutes and 33 seconds or whatever.
All right.
So
that sounds good.
Alrighty.
So, I guess... any other things before we do the housekeeping stuff and all that stuff? All right, cool. Well, you know, thanks guys for listening in to this episode 4 of Sharp Angles. You know, hope you guys enjoy it. If you do, It finally happened. You can email us at sharpangles@baconicecream.com. Yeah, send all your stuff there. You know, we have individual emails and stuff, but you know, we'll keep all that. You know, like, I'm sure you guys figure it out if you, you know, if you wanted to try. But sharpangles@baconicecream.com for all your sharp angles needs. You know, then if other things happen later, like flashcasts and whatnot, there might be other ways to contact us, but they're already set up, so that's all you guys need. You know, the next thing we need to do is possibly, like, think about, I don't know, like, other social outreach, trying to get people to actually, like, comment on stuff. You guys are listening. We've been seeing the numbers, and they're actually pretty cool. So thank you for continuing to download and listen to this podcast. We hope you enjoy it. Look forward to the next episode. Sorry guys that subscribe and then wait and then you know, like, listen to their episodes, like, you know, right when they show up on the phone. We apologize in advance because
it's my fault. I live in Maryland.
Well, not the distance.
Okay.
I'm apologizing in advance of the fact that episode 4 and episode 5 may in fact be right up against each other. So we apologize for that, but, you know, enjoy, because there's 2 episodes. So if you're listening and then I say episode 5 a whole bunch, which I'm sure I will, on the next episode, then you gotta go back. You gotta go back in time, and I'll remind you to go back in time and listen to the Captain America episode too. So, until then, you know, enjoy your Memorial Day weekend and, feel patriotic with Captain America. Yeah. And,
we'll good way to celebrate.
Rah, rah.
We'll see you next time on Sharp Angles. Take it easy, guys.
Bye, guys. Bye.